Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakti Vinayakita Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Ganga Maya Ki Jai Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vinayakita Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Ki Jai, Shri La Prabhupada Ki Jai, Shri La Prabhupada Ki Jai, Shri La Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur. All glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gaur. Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 17. verse 27. Shri Rudra Vacha,
Shri Rudra Vacha,
Dristavati,
Vasi,
Shushani,
Vigrani,
Hare, Abhuta, Kananaha, Mahatmyam, Vritya, Vritanam, Vishprahanam Mahatmanam Shri Rudra Vacha Tristavatya Sishu Shrani Hareradbhuta Kamanaha Mahatmyam Vritya Vrityanam Krishanam Mahatmanam Shri Rudra Vacha Krishna Vastya Shishu Shoni Hare Adhuta Karmanaha Mahatmyam Vritya Vrityanam Nishpranam Mahatmanam Shri Rudra Vacha Dristavatya Shishu Shoni Harerabhutta Karmanaha Mahatmyam Vritya Vrityanam Nishpranam Mahatmanam Shri Rudra Vacha, Lord Shiva said, Krishna Vatiyasi, have you seen? Shushani, O beautiful Parvati, Hare, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Adbhuta Kamana, whose acts are wonderful. Mahatmyam, the greatness. Pritya Britanam, of the servants of the servants. Hisparinanam, who are without ambitions for sense gratification. Mahatmanam, great soul. Translation. Lord Shiva said, "My dear beautiful Parvati, have you seen the greatness of the Vaishnavas? Being servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, they are great souls and are not interested in any kind of material happiness." Purport by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Shiva, the husband of Parvati, told his wife, "My dear Parvati, you are very beautiful in your bodily features. Certainly you are glorious. But I do not think that you can compete with the beauty and glory of devotees who have become servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Unquote. Of course, Lord Shiva smiled when he joked with his wife in that way, for others cannot speak like that. "The Supreme Lord," Shiva continued, "is always exalted in his activities. And here is another example of his wonderful influence upon King Chitraketu, his devotee. Just see, although you cursed the king, he was not at all afraid or sorry. Rather, he offered respect to you, called you mother, and accepted your curse, thinking himself faulty. He did not say anything in retaliation. This is the excellence of a devotee. By mildly tolerating your curse, he has certainly excelled the glory of your beauty and your power to curse him. I can impartially judge this devotee, Chitraketu, has defeated you and your excellence simply by becoming a pure devotee of the Lord, as stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Tadarapi sahishnuna. Just like a tree, a devotee can tolerate all kinds of curses and reversals in life. This is the excellence of a devotee. Indirectly, Lord Shiva forbade Parvati to commit the mistake of cursing a devotee like Chitraketu. He indicated that although if she was powerful, the king, without showing any power, had excelled her power by his tolerance. Om Ganataramandasya Ganajana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmesh Guru Venama. This verse graphically illustrates the potency, the superior potency, which is evoked by the quality of humility in the heart and demeanor of Vaishnavas. Lord Shiva is sort of joking with his wife, but he's making a very stern point for all of eternity, for all Vaishnavas to understand the gravity of the situation. Lord Shiva is praising his consort Parvati, her super excellent beauty and power, because she is, after all, a manifestation of the supreme primordial energy, Sri Radha, whose alternate feature in the material world as Mahamaya has an integral, inseparable part with Yogamaya in the service and pleasure of Sri Krishna. So she is the mistress of material energy, the very personification of Mahamaya, that great material energy which activates the unlimited material worlds and keeps the unlimited jiva souls bound in the shackles of ignorance. And so powerful and so subtle and so elusive is her influence that in the prison house of material existence there is no escape. Deliverance is granted only and solely by the mercy of the Lord, under whose desire the goddess of material energy, Parvati, is working. So perfect is the illusion that she casts over the conditioned souls that in this prison house of material world, unlike the best prison houses made by man, in which someone always escapes, and the escapees become heroes, they become famous for their ability to escape the most expert technological devices to ensure the captivity of the inmates with all kinds of surveillance equipment and high walls and barbed wire and electric fences, electronic surveillance on islands which have surrounding them sharks swimming in the waters. How is it possible that somebody always escapes? They're so desperate to reclaim their so-called freedom that somebody always escapes from the man-made prisons to become more deeply in shackles of Maya's web of material illusion, from which no one has or will ever escape without the pardon of the Supreme Lord. Because in this prison house of Maya, no one wants to escape. They're so attached to their shackles and chains and bondage and lusty desires that they don't even want to escape. So you can see how powerful is the goddess of material energy. And how bewildering is her spell. But what is the purpose of the material world? What is the purpose of any prison? The purpose of the material world is not for the punishment of the rebellious jivas. Because if it was simply created for punishment, then we would have to question, is the Lord really above all supremely merciful and kind and wanting his children to come home? Some people think the material world is meant for the pleasure of the living entities. And if that was so, we would have to question, how able is the Lord? Because misery awaits our every action and reaction in this material world. So it's not meant for pleasure. It's not meant for punishment. The pleasures and punishments are offered to encourage, to inspire the living entities to rectify their rebellious mentality. And awaken their inherent tendency and desire to serve the servants of the Lord, for which the prime requisite is humility. So in this verse, by praising the super excellent beauty of the goddess Parvati, who is a reflection of the personification of all charm, Sri Radha, the goddess of material energy, who is so powerful that activates the whole show of material existence, and so expert as to keep in bondage anyone who does not have the grace of the Lord permitting their return back to Godhead. But Lord Shiva is saying, your beauty and power and influence has been conquered by the humility in this Chitraketu, who, when issue your curse, which is irreversible, he responded with gratitude and respect, calling you mother, asking your pardon for his offense, which wasn't even really an offense at all. And Lord Shiva is praising this supreme potency of humility, which attracts the mercy of the Lord and empowers the devotee with the potency of the Lord and the grace of the Lord, which is our only fare for escaping this prison house and returning to our original home, where freedom of the soul to express and receive the love of God is our natural birthright, awaiting our rectification. But behind all this, all these wonderful interactions of Vaishnavas in this chapter, where King Chitraketu and Lord Shiva and Parvati before the assembly of sages are demonstrating the intricacies and wonders of Vaishnava behavior and relationship, behind all this is the hand of the Supreme Lord, who excels even his devotees in the quality of humility and the ability to perfectly personify his own words of Taradavi Sahishnana. The humility, the forbearance, the tolerance of the servants of the servants of the Lord. We do not have so much to learn from the perfect personality who never does anything wrong. We have so much to learn from great personalities who do make mistakes and who apologize and mean it. So King Chitraketu, from a superficial material perspective, he made a mistake. He joked about Lord Shiva and Parvati and brought upon himself the curse of the goddess. So from a superficial material perspective, it was a mistake. But the deeper significance of these Vaishnava relationships is that Sri Krishna is utilizing them to fulfill the deepest aspirations of his servants. Lord Shiva here is glorifying above and beyond the divine qualities of Parvati, who actually is Yoga Maya, but serving as Mahamaya in the material world, but also serving as Yoga Maya in the holy dawn as the assistant to Shiva Chaitapal, the guardian of the dawn. So she's inherently Yoga Maya, but acts as Mahamaya according to our mentality of wanting to rebel against the love of God or respond to his love with the qualities Chitraketu is exemplifying here. Gratitude, mercy, acceptance, respect. Lord Sri Krishna was orchestrating all these interactions to fulfill the deepest longings of his lost servant to come back home, back to Godhead. Lord Shiva is praising Chitraketu, is personifying Mahaprabhu's definition of the glories of a devotee, Trinadapi Srishna, Tororapi Srishna, Amanida Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadari, more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all false prestige, humble than a blade of grass, always offering respects to others in heart, body, mind, and words. Chitraketu is personifying this quality of a devotee, and therefore Lord Shiva is praising him above and beyond the glories of his own Shakti Parvati. But behind all this, these scenes is the loving hand of the Lord inspiring these devotees, inspiring Parvati to curse Chitraketu, to fulfill his deepest longings, to increase in his service to the servants of the Lord, and to fulfill his yearning to come back home, back to Godhead. If you look in the previous chapters, where the question arose, which inspired this narration about King Chitraketu and Parvati and Lord Shiva, the question being, how Ritashura, who appeared to be such a terrible, terrible demon, was speaking words indicating that he was serving as the guru to Indra, inspiring him to cut off his head, because he was afraid. He was so terrorized by this demon that the demigods were just running in fear. And Ritashura was preaching to Indra, don't be afraid, perform your duty. The outcome will be glorious. You're going to kill me, and I will fight because it's my duty, but I want you as quickly as possible to sever my head by the thunderbolt empowered by the potency of Godhead and the Dichi's austerities. So he was encouraging Indra, fight. Kill me, be victorious, because he knew that Krishna was responding to his innermost desire to go back home, back to Godhead. So we know that the soul is ever restless and yearning to abide in God. But how much do we realize how much that the Creator, conversely, is desiring communion with his parts and parcels. A loving response going both ways. So throughout eternity, it's so evident how more than we're yearning to belong to God, he is yearning to belong to us. From Brahma to Narada, Shiva, the four Kumaras, Bhishma, Manu, Prahlad, Janak, Shukadeva Goswami, we're continually hearing echoed throughout the pages of history since time immemorial how the Lord is yearning to fulfill the desires of his servants more than we're yearning to fulfill his desire. Our desire is to belong to him. His desire is to belong to us. That's what communion means. A loving, faithful exchange of service. So, Sri Krishna is glorified more and is more endearing to the heart when we think of him as a child in need of his mother's care and affection. A boy needing his father's guidance. A child concerned for the welfare of the calves in the forest. A prophet pleading for peace, acting as a diplomat before the evil Kauravas, chieftains, who were so determine that war. And after all, pierced by the arrow of a hunter, appearing to leave his body in an ordinary way, still throughout history, and we see it in the lives of his devotees, looking upon us to see where is our love, where is our response, where is our reciprocation with the communion that he desires. So behind all these other wonderful virtues appreciated, to be appreciated in these interactions, is how the Lord is utilizing his devotees. Actually, how the Lord is orchestrating all material energy. Because Parvati is an aspect of Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya, who affects the union of the individual soul with Krishna, has her alternate feature as Parvati, but really, the difference between Yoga Maya and Mahamaya, Yoga Maya who affects the union of the individual soul with Krishna, Mahamaya who deludes the living entity into thinking that he is the controller, the enjoyer, the proprietor of all his surveys, the difference between these two goddesses is really in response to our attitude of whether we want to serve or whether we want to control. This was exemplified in the pastime we told before, but we can go a little deeper. When Parvati heard her husband, Lord Shiva, just losing himself in excitement and joy, chanting the holy names of Gauranga. And Parvati inquired, "My dear Lord, who is this Gauranga?" Hearing his name, the sound of his name, my heart is simply melting. Thus far, all I've learned in regards to mantra and tantra simply really deepens the living entity's entanglement in the complexities of material existence. But hearing this Gauranga, I feel, is it true that I can attain real life? And Lord Shiva responded, "Unto you, who are the primordial energy, one portion of Sri Radha, I will express the deepest, purest essence of truth." Taking on the emotions of his devotee, the Lord will descend in the Kali Yuga to himself taste and distribute the essence of prema, brajarasa. And simply contemplating the Lord's descent as Gauranga, I spend my life in anticipation and ecstasy, forgetting my abode of Kashi, desiring to reside in a simple little hut on the bank of the Ganges to worship him. So Parvati, even though this was the Satya Yuga and there was many millenniums to wait before the appearance of Gauranga, in great anticipation could not wait. So she came to Navadvip Dham, the Lord's eternal abode. And in response to Jiva Goswami's question, from where comes the name Simantadvip? Lord Nityananda explained, she came here to this island, Simantadvip, and performed great tapasya. And fulfilling her desires, Lord Gauranga appeared before her with arms upraised in beautiful lotus eyes glancing upon her with deep affection, and that golden aura of Srimati Radhika's love illuminating all directions, and Parvati fell at his lotus feet, crying, "O Master of the universe, Jagannath, you have come to deliver all. But everyone knows that wherever there is Krishna, there is no Maya. And therefore, I am forced to reside beyond, outside the realm of your loving pastimes. You have endowed me with this thankless task of binding the conditioned souls in the web of illusion. So how am I to obtain your mercy and service? If you do not give me some means, then there is no hope and no life for me." And then Lord Gauranga, in response to her question, did what Lord Shiva is doing here, glorifying her position and that of the devotees. That you are never separate or outside of my pastimes, because my one internal energy has two faces according to how the jiva approaches her. She who is yoga maya in Braj and orchestrates my pastimes has another feature in the material world, and that feature is to subject the living entities to the reactions of their actions. But it's not meant simply for punishment. It is meant for edification. It is meant to teach us that we have no existence, no life, no hope, no happiness, no fulfillment outside of the realm of devotional service. But devotional service is available anywhere, at any time, if we simply approach the Lord's energy, not with a desire to exploit and control the pride of the false ego, but with the humility of the enlightened soul and the desire to serve the servants. So after Vritishura was preaching to Indra, serving as his guru, and inciting him to fight, "Don't flee the battlefield, fight, you will be victorious, you will kill me, and I'll be more victorious because I'll go back to Godhead." Then, after enlightening Indra with the desire to resume his duty, as he was fleeing the battlefield in total terror, but inspiring him to be fearless, to fight, to perform his duty, "Be victorious by cutting off my head. I'll be more victorious by going back to Godhead." You see what's really going on here. After preaching to Indra on the battlefield, Vritishura's, so-called Asura's, mind naturally flowed to the lotus feet of the Lord, with whom he had previously had darshan in the form of Lord Sankarshan, by following the instructions of Angira and Narada Muni. When he prayed, this is in the 13th chapter preceding this event, "O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant, so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes. My words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engaged in the loving service of your Lordship." So you see, for several chapters here, Chitraketu, in his various lifetimes, with so much yearning to go back to the Lord. But if we look a little deeper still, we'll find how much the Lord is yearning for communion with his lost servants. The superior affection and humility in the countenance of the Lord, surpassing even those of his own servants. But why? You know, Srila Prabhupada said we should not present ourselves as being most fallen, because the false ego is always seeking any way to be foremost in anything, even if it's degradation. So he said, no, you're not most anything. Prabhupada's response to try to teach us the proper etiquette and attitude. Because who is most glorious at everything, including humility? Not really Krishna, but when Krishna assumes the mentality of his own servant, then his humility surpasses those of anyone. And he gives, as the devotees give all glory and credit to the Lord, the Lord, let's not forget the reciprocation, offers all credit and glory for his own virtues to his servants. Of course, these most precious truths of transcendental wisdom are usually revealed and highlighted before the dark backdrop of calamity. Calamity is consistent in the material world, but there's certain events in which the darkness of calamity is so intense that it serves as an appropriate backdrop to highlight the most precious jewels of transcendental illumination. When Jayan Vijaya were being cursed, I mean, the four Kumaras were being cursed by Jayan Vijaya, it was a great calamity that in the spiritual world, or rather the gates to the spiritual world, this cursing could be, and the Lord rushed to the scene to see what could be done to restore the peace. And he was pleading with the four Kumaras, don't curse my dear servants, the doorkeepers, the gatekeepers. Any fault in them is really, I'm to blame. So if you have some grievance with them, then cut off my arms. But don't curse my servants, because I am the servant of my servants. Whatever glory is revealed in me is due to my serving my servants. And then he gave several analogies. The purifying effect of the Ganges, which washes away the sins of the unlimited jivas, is and emanates from my lotus feet, has that purifying effect simply because I'm a servant of my servants. That's where that purifying potency comes from. And the goddess of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, whose favor everyone is seeking and performing tapasya and adhering to strict vows. Everyone is seeking the favor of the goddess Lakshmi, goddess of fortune. She never stays with anyone very long. She resides eternally on my chest, Lord Narayana is saying. But why? What is it about me that attracts her, even though I have no attachment to her? Because I am the servant of my servants. That is the glory and quality in me which attracts her to my service eternally. So, if you're finding some fault in my servants, take it out on me. Chop off my arms or do whatever you want. Because I am the servant of my servants. And it's not just some rhetoric. It's the Lord's deepest feelings and sentiments of love. So, the soul is ever hankering for communion with the Lord. But we should not forget, because service means the desire to please the beloved. What is the beloved's desire? That we come home. And therefore, from the moment we take up the association of devotees, from the time we begin hearing the words of Shastra and surrendering to the spiritual master, to whatever extent we are sincere in our endeavor, then we're no longer subject to the laws of karma. We become subject to the superior energy of the mercy of Krishna. But that does not necessarily mean that from that point on everything becomes a life of ease. Coming under the personal direction of Krishna's love means that he will orchestrate all the material energy to help us on our path back home and to come home as quickly as possible, because Krishna is hankering for our return. So what happens in the life of devotee may look like karma. He's getting the reactions to his previous actions. It may look like he's been relieved of his karma, because he's not getting the reactions which is his rightful claim because of his previous actions. Or it may look like the devotee gets intensified reactions from his previous actions because of his surrendering to Krishna. But what it really means is that Krishna is looking for our welfare. He's looking out for our welfare. And he's orchestrating everyone and everything in creation to assist us in coming home as quickly and efficiently as possible. So here, Chitraketu, he was just expressing his wonder at the glory of his friend Lord Shiva, for which he got cursed to become a demon. But it was really Krishna acting through the heart of Parvati to serve his servant in fulfilling his deepest aspirations of communion with his Lord, for which the Lord had more hankering and yearning to commune with his lost servant. The love the Lord feels for his devotees and how much he wants their association was very vividly revealed when this final chapter in the glorious life of Haridas Thakur opened, when Sri Govinda, the Lord's own personal associate and servant, whose duty was to serve the servants, brought Mahaprasad to Haridas Thakur and found that he was still lying in bed, chanting very slowly. And Govinda asked him, "Are you all right?" And he said, "No, my body is all right, but my intelligence is failing." "You have brought, so today I will observe fasting. You brought Mahaprasad, which I must honor." So he bowed down and offered his prayers to that Mahaprasad and honored a tiny portion. And then again fell on his back, chanting very slowly, and obviously not in good physical condition. When Mahaprabhu heard this, he came personally to see Haridas Thakur and asked with great concern, "Haridas, are you well?" And Haridas responded, "My body is well, but my intelligence is failing." So what is the problem? "The problem is I'm having difficulty in fulfilling my vow of a fixed number of rounds." And then Lord Gauranga said, but Haridas, you're already a liberated soul. You've already fulfilled your function of expanding in this world some understanding of the glories of the holy name. You're becoming old. You can be a little bit more lax in your observance of the regulative principles. And then Haridas told the Lord, I have one yearning and longing which is deeper than this. I feel some premonition that very shortly you will conclude your manifest lila in this world. And my humble prayer and petition is, do you not reveal to me that final pastime in this world. Before that heart-rending time comes, let my body fall down in your presence. Let my eyes attain the perfection of fixing my consciousness on your lotus feet, embodying service. Let my tongue chant your holy name, and let my body fall down in your presence before I have to witness the final pastime of your lila in this world. That is my petition, my Lord. And please do not deceive me and cheat me of this most crucial necessity. And then the Lord was so moved. He said, but Haridas, how can I go on without you? Whatever happiness I feel is only because of your association. So Krishna will surely fulfill your prayer, but what about me? And then Lord Gauranga became so disturbed, he just had to leave. And the next day, when he came to visit Haridas, he brought his most intimate associates, Sarup Damodar, Ramananda Rais, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Kreshwar Pandit, who began to chant, and all the devotees began to respond and to dance. And by the pure chanting of Rakeshwar Pandit, everyone felt themselves floating in Vaikuntha. And then Haridas Thakur, by his pure will, forced the Lord to sit down right before him. And he fixed his eyes, like bumblebees, on the lotus face of Lord Gauranga. And then Haridas Thakur took the dust from all the associates of the Lord and placed it upon his heart. Then, clasping those lotus feet of Lord Gauranga and embracing them to his heart, he breathed his last. And everyone simultaneously was reminded of the glorious passing of Bhishma Dev in the presence of Lord Sri Krishna. But everything in Krishna Lila is actually enhanced in Gaura Lila. The emotions, the affection, the love, the bond between the Lord and his devotees is more intimate in Gaura Lila. So what was previously witnessed in the pastime of Bhishma Dev, giving up his body at will in the presence of Lord Krishna, was actually enhanced in the glorious passing of Bhishma Dev. How the Lord is ever yearning for the association of his servants. How Lord Gauranga, and it's not simply some rhetoric, he really felt that he could not go on without the association of his humble servant, to whom he himself felt the Lord to be the servant of Haridas Thakur. So, with the passing of Haridas Thakur, loud Sankirtan rent the sky, and the Lord picked up the body of Haridas and began to dance. how the Lord not considers himself merely, but is yearning to be more and more the servant of his servants. And the Lord dancing with the body of Haridas Thakur in a feeling of mixed jubilation and lamentation. Jubilation that he'd gone home, but lamentation that Lord Gauranga was bereft of his physical association, and taking his holy body and dancing with him to the shore, leading the Sankirtan party to the shore where Lord Gauranga personally bathed Haridas in the ocean, proclaiming that from now on this sea is a holy place of pilgrimage. Then Lord Gauranga personally placing that body in a hole in the sand, and with his own hands decorating the body of Haridas with the Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath. Lord Gauranga personally placing sand over his body as the devotees were chanting and dancing. Lord Gauranga personally taking his own cloth, going to the different shopkeepers, begging. I'm begging. This never happened before or since, that the Lord with his own cloth was begging alms for a feast in honor of Haridas Thakur. This is a unique example of this event, of this phenomenon. And then preparing a feast, and Lord Gauranga personally serving that prasad to all the devotees. And then giving his final benediction, that anyone who has observed the passing of Haridas, anyone who bathes in the sea where his holy form was placed into samadhi, or anyone who even remembers Haridas Thakur, will attain the benediction of shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. And then everyone was immersed in chanting, all glories to Haridas Thakur, who revealed to the world the glories of the holy name. The holy name is really the touchstone which fulfills all desires. But it is inseparable that we revere the lives and the teachings of the great souls who give us the example of how devotees must interact with one another, with the whole environment, in such an attitude of humility as to evoke the divine nature to reveal herself and prepare us for going back to that land where there is no false ego, where there is no sense of proprietorship by the devotees or the Lord, where service is the predominant mentality directing the lives and activities of both the Lord and his servants. Until we are so deeply steeped in such an attitude of humility, we have to practice seeing that this idea of inferior nature is all the response of Durga, Parvati, to our own rebellious mentality. And we have to practice here and now to rectify the mentality, to interact with everything as being essentially, inherently divine. The inferior nature is a response to our own inferior consciousness of wanting to enjoy and exploit and control. So especially in the holy Dham, especially in holy association of Vaishnavas, especially in the chanting of the holy name, that humility is the essential guiding principle to direct our dealings and our consciousness and our feelings to approach the holy name with proper mentality. Otherwise, we can hear from the scriptures the glories of the holy name, and think that just like dying on Jamil after a life of such degradation, which is, you know, typical of most of us, chanted the holy name unconsciously, inattentively, meaning something else, Namabas, and was liberated. We hear resounding throughout the scriptures the glories of the holy name, how it redeems the worst, most degraded of sinners. So we may take to the holy name with such incomplete faith, thinking that we can disregard all the religious instructions and spiritual etiquette which must accompany the chanting of the holy name. Take, for example, previous Leela in the life of Hardas Thakur. This was just after delivering the prostitute. And of course, a very similar pastime in delivering Mayadevi, who is Parvati herself, came to Haridas to bewilder him, which is her duty in this world as a service to Krishna, to keep everyone deluded, but really wanting that they overcome their delusions. That is her heartfelt yearning. So when Mayadevi herself appeared, and the beautiful portal to the cave of Haridas Thakur, where Tulsi Devi was enshrined on a raised altar, and the moonlight was glittering on the waves of the Ganges, and the forest was illumined by the moonlight, when suddenly a personality appeared, bathing the entire countryside in golden aura, and a woman whose beauty would be bewildering to the gods, whose mere ornaments were more captivating than the songs of Gandharvas and angels, whose fragrance perfumed the entire countryside with a bewildering, intoxicating scent, appeared. And Haridas was all alone in the solitary cave. No brahmacharis to tell him that, look, this is Maya. And she manifests such postures which would bewilder even Brahma. But remember that Haridas is Brahma in this particular universe. How fortunate we are to have, as the engineer of this universe, a Brahma who is the eternal servant of the Lord Haridas Thakur. How would you like to live in a universe where the engineer was a jnani, a speculator? What a precarious position. The engineer of this universe is Brahma, a portion of Haridas Thakur, the eternal associate of the Lord for the redemption of the living entities. So when Mayadevi, for 3 days continuously, almost identical with the previous pastime of the prostitute, but certain differences. The prostitute was redeemed by her training to bow down before a holy man in Tulsi Devi. That endowed her with Shraddha, to be able to hear the holy name and confess that she was such a wretched sinner as a harlot, no sin she had not committed, and begging for Haridas' forgiveness and instructions, receiving from him the holy name. Mayadevi, after, once again, 3 nights in the association of Haridas, begged him for initiation into the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. She said, previously I received initiation of the chanting of the holy name of Ram from my divine husband Shiva. And that holy name of Ram bestows liberation. But I'm begging and pleading and yearning for initiation from you into the holy name, chanting of the holy name of Krishna, which bestows love of the most intimate feature of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the darling of Braj. And he gave her that initiation. So, what is the question of the wonder and the glories of the holy name if such personalities as Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Shuka, the four Kumaras come as ordinary mortals, not being, but playing like ordinary mortals in this material world to assist Lord Gauranga in his pastimes of